A cure for the common crank. A horror, trash, sci-fi, action podcast. Allow this to be your cure as well.
Welcome, listeners, to part two of the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival.
Horror.
Thank you, Nicole, for pronouncing horror correctly. Nicole, you made it through part one.
I made it through part two.
You did make it through part two, technically, because we did already watch all of these movies, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, technically, you did make it through part two as well. I'm glad you survived.
Yeah, me too.
From part one, Nicole, there are a couple little details I want to talk about.
You want to clean up?
Do a little clean up here. Okay. Just a little bit of clean up.
We got to clean it up, brother.
When our friend Emily listened to the episode, she heard the bit where we were talking about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde from 1920.
Oh, that's her favorite movie.
It's her favorite movie?
I think it's her favorite movie.
It's one of her favorite movies, certainly. But yeah, she's the silent film expert.
Yes.
So, during the episode, I mentioned that I wasn't sure if there was a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde made before this. And you're thinking like 1920. You know, pretty easy to convince you that
early.
It's not the first one. But I said I wasn't sure, and sure enough, there is one prior to this.
Wow.
1912, I believe is what Emily said. I saw conflicting reports where it said 1913, but sometimes those dates are a little skewed. It's hard to say exactly when it was released in 1912 or 1913. But yes, there was another one. And again, based on the, you know, whole projection speed situation, I saw also conflicting reports saying it ran anywhere from like 12 to 23 minutes, I think.
Okay.
So somewhere in that range. So it's a much shorter film, not necessarily feature length by Hollywood standards.
Right.
But
is it a surviving watchable?
You know, I think so. I think there are ways you can find it out there. I didn't look for it, but maybe we should try it, see if we can track it down.
Yeah.
Give it a watch. See if it's better than 1920. Emily said it was not.
Well,
it's not as good.
1920, that was pretty good.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is pretty good. That's a pretty good one. This earlier one, maybe, you know, it can't quite cut it. But still, it does exist. There is one prior to that.
Okay.
Yeah, that was made.
That is good to know.
Just clearing that up. You got to clear the air on these silent films because a lot of people, they don't go back and look for them. And, you know, they just assume that the common crank is right about this stuff.
Oh my gosh,
you got to clean it up. Also, Nicole, there's something that disturbed me when I was going back listening and editing the first part.
Okay.
And what disturbed me was I was talking about how when I envision 1958's The Fly in my head, I always seem to think of it in terms of black and white.
Right, because you originally watched it in black and white, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
And I said also Hammer's Curse of the Werewolf, I did the same thing. Like, I always see that movie in my head in black and white. But both of these movies were filmed in color, released in color. So, and how I phrased it, I was worried that people thought I enjoyed watching colorized versions of movies. And that's not really the case. I have seen some colorized versions. But I had to clear this up. I was disturbed. I'm very old, you see. So when I watched them on black and white, in black and white, it was on an actual
black and white TV.
Television. Yes.
Yes.
Because when I was growing up, we had one large console color television in our family room, living room. But then we also had this tiny little, you know, I don't know what it was, probably like a 12 or 13 inch
black and white TV
with this old white casing on it. I can distinctly remember it because it moved around. It was very portable. It had a handle on it and everything.
Right.
So you can move it from room to room. So I'm pretty sure, yes. And I would watch, and Amy too, we would watch like the creature feature on that black and white television, like sometimes in her room, or, you know, sometimes I would watch movies on it when it was in the dining room.
Yeah.
And other people were watching, you know, other things.
They were watching
in
Dallas,
the living room, Dallas watching and... Dallas or Dynasty or something. Falcon Crest. I wanted to see what was on, you know, the local syndicated television station,
yeah.
The UHF station at the time, which was Channel 23 KBSI in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Because usually before they became a Fox affiliate, in the evenings, like around 7 or 8 o'clock, they would always have some sort of movie on. And then, of course, they did Misty Brew's Creature Feature late at night on Friday nights most of the time. Yeah. It may have moved to Saturday nights sometimes. But, yes, anyway. So I definitely distinctly remember seeing Curse of the Werewolf on the Creature Feature at one point in black and white on the black and white television.
Okay.
And The Fly may have certainly been the same situation.
So it may surprise you, but I also had a black and white TV.
You're
in my
also
house.
Really old, is what you're saying. Oh my God.
Because
we're old.
Yes. The main television.
Well, we did grow up in the 1950s. I'm not kidding. That old. I'm kidding.
But yes, my brother had a black and white TV in his room, which we played Atari on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you had to play Atari on the black and white television, too.
Yeah. So we played Atari in his room as not to disturb, you know, the main television room.
Yes, of course. So every Atari game, in your mind, is in black and white.
That's right. Stampede, all my favorites.
Everything, black and white.
Obviously, Stampede's my favorite.
Because that's the only one you could remember.
No.
Now, Nicole, before this part two episode of the festival is released, let's remind people, because this episode is going to cover letters I, J, K, L, and M. But part one covered A through G. Between G and I, there's another letter.
Oh my goodness.
That letter is missing. What happened to it?
Well.
Do you know what letter that is, Nicole, between G and I?
Yes.
What is it?
H.
Oh, the letter H.
Yes.
Oh, of course. Well, what happened to that one, Nicole?
So H has its own episode.
Oh, it has its own episode.
That's right. It's our first watch along. Huh. So it's like you can watch the movie with us.
Yeah.
You just put the movie on.
And we just do a running commentary.
And it's like we're there with you.
Yeah, sitting on the couch with you.
Sitting on the couch.
Keeping you company.
That's right.
And you know, this is kind of a substitute because in recent years, there was a Friday the 13th in October within the past few years, and we just did a big marathon of all the movies. Well, I did primarily. I started at like 5 in the morning or something, and I went in reverse order because I didn't want to end with that Friday the 13th like remake thing, which some people enjoy, but I'm not crazy about. So I didn't want to end with that one. I didn't want to end on a sour note in my mind. So I started with that one, then went, you know, backwards in time. Jason X, Freddy versus Jason, I missed that one. Jason X, Jason Goes to Hell, and so on into the regular series. And we ended, of course, with the original Friday the 13th. But we did have, the door was open to guests to come over who
That's
were invited
right.
to come over and watch and kind of, you know, pop in whenever they felt they could and watch movies with us. And then also we did another kind of Halloween one where we watched a bunch of classic movies as well and invited people over to come and watch that. So, listeners, in your mind, you can use this as a substitute because we're not doing that this year due to the pandemic, due to kind of sickly cats not wanting to add to their anxiety. So, yes, use this as a substitute. You can watch Hellraiser with us. Right, Nicole?
That's right. It's very exciting.
Yes. And if you've never been invited to the house, if you're not local, if you're in another country, well, we don't know you, so you probably can't come over. Unless, of course, you're Michael Rooker, then you can come over
and
have a beer.
He has an open door policy.
Yes, that's totally fine.
We have an open door policy for him.
But, yeah. You know, this is a way that you could kind of sit down on the couch and watch movies with Nicole and the Comic Craig. And hopefully we're not too annoying. We give you some interesting facts. But, yeah. So that's why there's no H, Nicole.
It was actually a lot more challenging for me than I thought. Because I don't like to talk during movies.
Right, yeah. It's not something that we do a lot of. Unless the movie's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes then, you know, we'll have some fun with it. Hellraiser, there's not a lot of comedy involved.
No.
Maybe you could find a way to twist it and lighten it up, but it's a pretty serious kind of, like, dour movie, you know?
So, I will say that I found it kind of challenging to remember to talk.
During the recording.
Yeah, during the recording.
I think you did all right. It was fine. We'll let the listeners decide. We'll let them let us know if they enjoyed it, if they had a good time, if they'd like us to do it again. Maybe we'll take another well-known movie at some point for some specific reason, maybe an anniversary or something like that, and talk about that movie, something that's kind of easily accessible online on a streaming service or has been out for years. And, you know, if you don't have it, if you haven't seen it, you probably should have. One of those types of situations, Nicole.
Yeah.
All right, Nicole, are you ready to
I'm ready.
Part two, which I'm did survive, you said, because you watched all the movies. So,
except for one.
Well, except for one. Yeah, and we'll get to that. But, yes, let's go with part two of the 16th annual A to Z of horror. Horror?
Nicole. Horror.
Yes, Nicole, we're going to do that. All right, listeners, stay tuned.
It's October. It's Halloween. It's time. Welcome to the 16th annual A to Z of Horror Festival. Hi,
Nicole. I drink your blood.
Ah, yuck.
I don't really drink your blood. That's the name of the movie, Nicole.
Oh, that's right.
Letter I, Nicole, is I drink your blood because it starts with I, the letter I drink your blood.
Okay.
This was released, Nicole, in December of 1970, and that's about the closest I could narrow it down to. It didn't give me any kind of date or anything.
Huh. It seems like a real 70s movie.
Well, this is definitely, yes, an exploitation trash movie,
yes,
isn't it, Nicole?
Yes. Pretty trashy.
Pretty trashy, and a lot of things are exploited.
Yes.
Specifically, the virus known as rabies, Nicole.
There's a lot of misinformation about rabies in this
movie. A lot of misinformation about rabies, really?
Yeah, I don't think it really goes into effect that quickly in a human.
Oh.
And that's not the way they act.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you know? Have you been around a lot of people with rabies?
No, but it seems like really exaggerated.
This is pretty much like medically documented right here.
I don't know. It seems like rabies was also like a euphemism for zombies in this movie.
What? There are no zombies in this movie, Nicole.
The people that have the rabies basically turned into zombies.
Whatever, Nicole. This is a horror movie. Horror. It runs 1 hour and 23 minutes, Nicole. So, the version that we watched was released by Grindhouse on a Blu-ray of this trash exploitation movie. And the version we watched specifically was the original X-rated cut, apparently. So this movie, there's a claim that this is the first, but maybe not necessarily the first, but one of the first movies that is rated X for violence alone. Not for, like, sex or nudity. For violence alone, this movie is maybe the first, but one of the first ones to receive an X rating just based on violence alone. Can you believe that? Does that seem reasonable? Were you that offended by the violence
I
that you think it should have been rated X?
I wasn't that offended.
Well, this was 1970.
So I can see that, you know, I can see where the violence definitely came in.
Perhaps.
But
it could have been shocking to some. But over the years, you've been desensitized. So
exactly.
Yes, you no longer care.
I have to say, I quite enjoy the lead in to the movies, like the Grindhouse and that little tune that they play.
Yeah.
I really get excited when I hear that.
Yeah. They play that at the beginning of some of these movie releases.
And some of the older, it makes me excited.
It's got like a drive-in feel or something. This movie, Nicole, was written and directed by David E. Durston. He didn't really do much else other than some other X-rated movies that looked like they were probably rated X because of sex and nudity. That was supposed to make you chuckle, Nicole.
Okay.
There you go. That was a weak effort. Okay. Woo, boy. I see what I'm dealing with today here.
Hey.
This movie was originally titled Phobia. But then some marketing genius, a marketing guru, Nicole, started sending it around probably to Grindhouse theaters
they
and drive-ins.
They reread Old Yeller and decided rabies was going to be a better, disease or something.
No. So, yeah, rabies is still in the movie, but yes, they put it on a double bill, Nicole, with another movie called I Eat Your Skin. So a lot of times you'll see, if you're looking through horror history like I do every day, you're looking through horror history and you see these old ads, posters for I Drink Your Blood, double billed with I Eat Your Skin. Well,
okay. That's
why they changed the title because
that is,
of that.
That is a much catchier title that goes with, that does go together.
I Drink Your Blood and I Eat Your Skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go together.
Yeah, they go together.
Exactly. So I Eat Your Skin, actually, we've talked about before, but not really the movie. We talked about the director of that movie, Del Tenney, who also did the movie The Horror of Party Beach, which we talked about this summer, if you remember, Nicole. So, Nicole, what is this all about, this movie about? I don't think there's any blood drinking at all. So the title Phobia really makes more sense. We're not talking about ganja and Hess here. There's no drinking blood. There's no vampirism.
There is not really any of that. So it's this ghost town. It's basically a ghost town.
It kind of is,
There's a baker.
A baker's still there.
The baker and a veterinarian.
Yes,
and
that's all who's left in the town.
And his family. So the veterinarian has a granddaughter, a grandson that lives with him. So it's the baker, the veterinarian, and his grandkids are only people in the town. But then
there's some other people, working on a dam, nearby or
something.
Like
the construction crew.
Yeah, the construction crew.
So then you get the feeling the baker and the lead guy on the construction crew or the architect of the dam.
Maybe an engineer.
Yeah, the engineer maybe. I don't know. One of the lead dudes.
Yeah. One of the lead dudes over there making this dam.
They're together.
They're a couple, it seems.
They're a couple.
Yes.
So, anyway, the baker, she makes them food and takes it up there every day. You know, and you get a flash to this this other group of people.
Another group of people, Nicole. And this is what the movie actually starts out with, this other group of people.
Right.
And they appear to be Satanists, Nicole?
I just think they're a group of hippies, cultists.
Satanists? Yeah, cultists, yeah.
I think something calls them hippies, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're hippie is dropped a few times, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess they're Satanists.
Yeah.
Or they worship Satan, they do rituals.
Yeah, it starts out with them doing a ritual, around a campfire kind of situation.
So anyway, this granddaughter, her name's Mildred, she sees the...
Mildred.
She sees the group of cultists start a sacrifice. And they see her, and they go after her. But one of the guys said that he invited her from town. Well, this other these other guys catch her and they rape her.
Yeah, they attack her and rape her.
Anyway, so, she's still alive, but they let her go back home, you know.
And yeah, the veterinarian is concerned. The grandfather, the veterinarian, is concerned because she's been attacked. She's been raped. The grandson. What's the grandson's name?
He's angry that this happened, and he's angry that these people are in his town.
Pete. Little Pete. How old do you think Pete is, Nicole?
Oh, he's got to be about like 10 to 12.
10 to 12.
Yeah.
That sounds about
something
right.
Something like that.
But yeah, you're right. He's very upset. He's concerned about these cultists being in town.
Yeah.
He's very worried. He doesn't trust them. He's very suspicious. He keeps spying on them.
He does. Because
they come to, like, town. They come to the baker's place or something, and they start talking about, hey, you know, is there any place we can stay around here? And, well, the hotel, you know, that's been out of business for a long time. All the houses are going to be coming down soon, I guess because of the dam being constructed. Like, maybe this entire town is getting wiped out because of the dam? That's
probably
what I'm guessing.
That's what I'm guessing, too, is, like, they're getting ready to vacate the town so that they can open the dam.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's ever really said, but that must be what's happening. So, yes, these cultists, they seem, you know, friendly enough, but, you know, the kid Petey's kind of suspicious. So he follows them. They go to, like, the hotel, the old hotel, and they're just staying there, even though it's run down and abandoned.
Yeah,
they're just staying there as squatters because they don't care. They're cultists.
They're cultists.
They need a place to stay.
So the hotel is rightly overtaken by, you know, animals because it's vacant. So there's lots of rats, and they go on a rat hunt, and they, like, hunt and kill these rats, and
yeah.
It's kind of, I don't like to see violence towards animals.
No. And yeah, this is one of those things that in the movie, I didn't know this was in the movie. This was the first time I've seen the movie, Nicole. So I didn't know. But yeah, there's definitely animal violence in this. That's not going to be for all tastes. A lot of people are not going to be able to stomach that. Yeah, there's rat violence, and there's goat violence specifically.
Yeah, so
there's also dog violence, but I don't think that the dog was really killed. I hope not.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So, the dog was sick, though. So,
yes.
Because
Pete finds
a dog, and the dog does have rabies.
Yes.
So, it's going to attack Pete, so Pete shoots the dog.
He does,
but
prior to this, we'll back up just a little bit. The veterinarian, he goes to check on these cultists because there's suspicion that they were the ones who attacked his granddaughter.
Right. So,
Mildred.
And they beat him up.
Yeah.
You know, they beat the veterinarian up.
And they also drug him. They give him LSD. So they beat him up, they drug him, and then they pretty much send him home, you know, and he's like, he's not in a very good way, of course. He's kind of old.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's taking LSD forcibly, and yeah, he's been beaten up. So, Pete, this was the cool part of the movie. I kind of enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm.
Pete's little scheme here. So he has shot the dog that had rabies, and he knows all about rabies because his grandfather told him all about rabies.
Yeah, his grandpa's a vet.
He knows all about rabies.
And he's a 10 to 12 year old, like, teenage boy. Well, so is that teenager?
No.
No.
10 to 12 is not teenager. Okay. 13, that's when it
begins. So anyway, he's a young boy, and he's really interested in, like, you know.
He wants to be a veterinarian, is what he says. But what does he do with the dog?
So
what is his scheme here?
He goes and collects
for revenge
the dog's blood, and he goes to the baker, and he injects it into these meat pies and to give to the cultists to eat. So he's a pretty devious little Pete.
This is a pretty good scheme. Pretty good scheme he's got going here. So the cultists, they eat the meat pies.
Uh-huh.
And what happens to them, Nicole?
Except for one cultist.
One cultist is not, because he's on the outs with the group. And this is the one who was friendly before with Mildred and had invited her to kind of spy on this cult ritual at the beginning of the movie.
Right. So he didn't appreciate them hurting his friend.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's on the outs. So he goes off in a huff and doesn't eat. So, yeah, everybody else kind of devours it.
They eat the meat pies.
They eat the meat pies.
They gotta have something to eat.
Yeah, gotta have something to eat.
And what happens to them?
They get rabies.
Yeah, they get rabies. They start
foaming at the mouth and going crazy.
Yeah, there's a lot of madness, a lot of rabies madness amongst the humans then, these cultists.
Hydrophobia, of course.
Hydrophobia, yes. And yeah, there's one particular cultist who, let's just say, she likes to spend time with
the men. The men.
And some men from the dam, the engineer, whoever's in charge of the whole
the situation workers, there, the construction
at
workers.
The dam, he sends some of the workers back to town to check and make sure things are okay.
Yeah.
Because there's been a bad element reported in town. So he sends them back there, and well, these guys, they're very eager to get it on with this woman that's a member of the cult who happens to be infected with rabies.
That's right. And if transmission of rabies does happen, you know, with body fluid.
I see, Nicole. Well, so.
So these, all these construction workers now have rabies.
And the thing is, Nicole, it's not one construction worker. It's not two. It's not even three.
It's like it's 30. Like,
yeah, I don't know how many it is. But man, there was something going on in that hotel behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Whew. So, yes. Well, and then all of these construction workers, the dam workers, they're all infected.
Yep.
They all have rabies. So you got the cultists having rabies. You have the construction slash dam workers. They have rabies. So this is a problem, Nicole.
Yeah.
There's only a few people left that don't have rabies.
That don't have rabies.
And, you know, one of my favorite scenes is they're running away. The remaining people are running away from the people with rabies. And the people with rabies, they now have, like, weapons. They've picked up, like, axes or things like that. And they're just chasing people around because they're insane. So they're insane with rabies.
And they're insane with rabies. They're foaming at the mouth. And they're like, crazed. Their eyes are crazed and insane with the madness.
Yes, Nicole. Sometimes they attack each other. Sometimes they don't. So, I don't know why that is. Certain ones rub each other the wrong way. I don't know, Nicole. But, yes, back to my favorite scene. Well, one of them. They're running away from this mob. And they're like, get to the creek! So they go to the creek. So they're in the water. And this is where I was like, you know, I had forgotten that there was like this fear of water, like tied to rabies. I had no memory of that. And you said, what are you talking about, Craig? Haven't you seen Old Yeller? Or something like that, I think you said. Anyway, so they're in the creek, and my favorite is when they're, like, splashing and kicking water. Kicking water specifically made me chuckle. They're kicking water at the people who have rabies, and they're kind of cowering in fear, then like, you know, like that. Just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah. But, you know, that was great, Nicole. That was just great.
Yeah.
So the end of the movie is just chaos. There's all this chaos. You have the baker, Pete, and Mildred trying to survive. Like, they're trapped in a car, trying to withstand the onslaught of these people, like, banging on the windows, banging on the car. Some outside police force arrives and tries
and
to
then
kind
just
of drive the mob,
everybody.
Start shooting everyone. But, boy, this... Yeah, this movie, it's a little nuts, Nicole.
It
a little bit nuts. Definitely, like we said, trashy exploitation at its finest or worst, whatever the case may
be. Whatever, yeah.
And perhaps middle of the road. You know, I thought it was okay. If I were to amass or murder it, I might lean towards the murdering. I mean, it's certainly not a very good movie. It's not a fine production.
It certainly kept my attention because there's a lot of action.
There's a lot going on, yeah.
I'm going to murder it as well.
You're also going to murder it.
It's just, it's not worth watching again. Definitely worth one time.
But you don't necessarily need to see it again.
Right.
And then, yeah, you have like the element of the animal violence. For me, that brings it down a level too. These poor rats and the poor goat. And, like, you see them multiple times, and, like, yeah, I don't want to see that. So, yes, maybe worth a watch one time, if you can withstand the animal violence. And then, you don't need to see it again. But, You should watch the scene of them kicking water out of the creek at the infected people, because that's kind of amusing. At least that's something. Something enjoyable. You know, the only recognizable face in this movie for me was the actor Lynn Lowry, who plays the character Carrie, who doesn't speak in the movie. She does appear later in George Romero's The Crazies in 1973 and David Cronenberg's Shivers in 1975. And she's in some other things as well. But yeah, she's really kind of the only recognizable standout face in the entire movie.
And she's a very pretty person.
Striking kind of appearance.
She plays one of the cultists.
Yeah, she's one of the cultists. Yeah. Well, I Drink Your Blood, it is what it is, Nicole.
Yeah.
It is perhaps the first, or one of the first, movies rated X.
Okay.
On the basis of violence alone. So it has that going for it anyway.
The biggest, bloodiest horror show in history. I Drink Your Blood. Men become animals and eat their victims. I Drink Your Blood. A young boy infects an entire town with rabies and turns a group of men into a band of bloodthirsty zombies ravaging a peaceful countryside. I Drink Your Blood will make your blood curdle and your skin crawl. But you will sit there and suffer through the tortures of the damned. You will sit and watch this shocking ugliness splashing across the screen. You will ask yourself, what acts of sadism will this electric knife be used for? What horrors will be performed with this axe, this hose, this dagger, this gun, this sword? All the implements necessary to make this the ultimate in adult horror films. We have painted a bloody picture, but it is only a small part of what actually takes place in I Drink Your Blood. Can you take it? If you have a strong constitution, we challenge you to test it and sit through I Drink Your Blood.
We have a movie that has kind of become a cult feminist horror movie.
Huh.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk really like the past like year or so. I guess because it was like its 10th anniversary about this being like this kind of new feminist cult classic.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I guess, you know, take that for what you will, I suppose.
Okay.
Maybe that means something to you. Maybe it doesn't. Nicole, what is this movie called?
Jennifer's Body.
And apparently, that title comes from a song with the same title by the band Hole. Courtney Love.
Mm-hmm.
And you like Hole, but I've never been a big Hole fan.
Yeah, you've never liked him.
No. Him.
Them.
Jennifer's Body was released, Nicole, September 18th of 2009. It's rated R, and it runs, Nicole, 1 hour and 42 minutes. This is another movie in the festival already that is kind of like a comedy horror. There's a lot of comedy horror.
You did choose quite a lot of comedy horrors.
I feel like maybe toward the end of the festival, maybe that's going to drop off. We'll see. I guess we'll see. I don't know. So, Jennifer's Body, Nicole, what's this all about?
So, you have best friends, and they're Jennifer, played...
Jennifer.
Who's she played by?
Megan Fox, Nicole.
Yeah, and then you have Needy.
Needy is played by Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, so they're best friends. basically, they're, you know, just as best friends do, they're going out.
They're high schoolers.
They're sky schoolers. They're having high fun. School.
This is a high school movie.
That's right. It's a high school movie. So Needy has a boyfriend. His name's Chip.
Played by Johnny Simmons.
So Jennifer's really the leader of their, you know, duo, I would say. Whatever Jennifer says, Needy's going to do it, you know, because I guess they're codependent like that, you know?
Yeah, that's just their relationship.
That's their relationship. So Jennifer wants to go to see this band at this, she calls it a club.
But it's really just a dive
it's
bar.
It's really just a dive bar, exactly. So they go see this band, and
what's the band's name, Nicole? Low Shoulder.
That's
like
right.
Those signs in the side of the road where there's a low shoulder.
So Low Shoulder is this guy band from the city. I guess at one point they just said like it was a group of guyliners.
Yes. Yeah. Guyliners.
Wearing guyliner.
And this is 2009. I don't know, because Nicole, I don't know if they did in the movie, but you kept kind of referring them to them as like goth people. Like you had like the goth people at the high school and then this band, you know, but like, what's the difference between emo and goth, Nicole?
I just think goths came first.
Goth came first?
I think goth is an older term.
Yeah. Do they mean the same thing?
I don't think they mean the same thing, necessarily. I think goth is leaning more towards darkness and death and just, you know, observance of cemeteries and dark culture.
But emo, they're just sad.
Yeah.
They're just sad.
They wear white belts and they're sad.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up.
I don't know what emo is.
It's okay. I'm just having fun. We're just having fun on the podcast, which is what we do.
So don't get offended if you wear guy liner and wear white belts. That's fine.
If you say so. So Adam Brody plays Nikolai, who's the lead singer of Low Shoulder.
Okay.
And oh baby, what a stud. Jennifer is all about him.
Yeah, she'd like him.
She'd like him.
Yeah.
Well, so there's a little hint in this movie. And it's a pinball machine. And the pinball machine is kind of like a classic pinball machine from the 80s. And the name of the pinball machine, Nicole, that's in the club, the dive bar, is Fire with an exclamation point. So what happens to this dive bar during the concert?
Well, it catches on fire.
It does.
So it kills a lot of people in the bar.
People are trying to escape. Chris Pratt is in the bar as this character Roman. I don't know if he ever makes it out. Is he dead too?
I don't think he makes it out.
He doesn't make it out. So, yeah, Chris Pratt's in the movie, but not for very long.
So, anyway, Needy and Jennifer make it out because they go through a window in the girls' bathroom.
There's also a character, Craig, in the bar. And he's killed too. He's also dead in there. Yeah. Anyway, yes, they escape.
They escape. So does Low Shoulder.
Low Shoulder does escape as well.
Yeah. So they have this van.
Yeah. And after the fire, they're like, hey, Jennifer, come and get in the van.
They're acting like nothing's happened.
Yeah, it's no big deal. Just come get in the van.
And she does.
She does. And Needy does not want to get in the van. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want Jennifer to get in the van. But Jennifer is going to do what Jennifer wants to do.
That's right.
And Needy's upset.
So she does call her boyfriend and says that Jennifer got in this rapey 80s van.
Mm-hmm.
But, she just went off with them, and Needy goes about her business.
Yes. And Low Shoulder, they want to know, Jennifer, are you a virgin?
And she says yes.
She says yes.
Because she's thinking that they just want to have sex with her, and she's like, yeah, I don't know how to do that.
So they end up taking her to this waterfall to perform a ritual on her.
A satanic ritual.
Didn't we just talk about this in a previous movie? Satanic
ritual. It's kind of repeating here.
Apparently, Nicole, this waterfall, it's a real place.
That's right.
It's real. This is at Judge Magni State Park in Minnesota.
I think it's Devil's Kettle. And I think Needy explains it like scientist people put in like things into this whirlpool and they never come out anywhere.
Yes, that's correct. Apparently, it is a glacial pothole, Nicole. Okay. That's what happens. That's where the water goes, into this glacial pothole.
So, whatever goes in doesn't come out.
I guess it doesn't come back out.
Yeah.
So, they perform this ritual. But, what happens then?
So, later that night, Jennifer just shows up at Needy's house.
That's right.
And she's all covered in blood.
Yeah, she doesn't look very good.
Yeah, she doesn't look very healthy. So anyway, she ends up, like, throwing up all over Needy's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And then just leaves.
Yeah. And it's this black kind of weird CGI vomit with weird spiky things that come out of it. But apparently, it was a combination of Hershey's chocolate syrup and CGI.
Okay.
So there was some legitimate chocolate syrup involved, too.
At least that tasted good when she was, like, upchucking it.
Yeah, probably. So the town is totally upset because all these people have been killed in the fire, in this bar. They've all been killed.
Yeah. Everybody's sad at school, of course, because they know people that have died.
Classmates have killed, Nicole. You have a character, Jonas, played by Josh Emerson. He's upset because Craig was killed.
Yeah.
Craig was killed at the bar in the fire. So Jennifer comforts him, leads him out to the woods, to the forest, Nicole.
Yeah.
Just outside of, like, school in the football field or something. And, well,
she comforts him and, you know, they start kissing.
Yeah, she comes on to him. And then what happens, Nicole?
Then she takes her top off, and then her mouth opens up, and she eats him.
Yes, that's right. First the top comes off, then she eats him.
Then she eats him, right. Yeah. So, I was actually pretty startled by that. Like, I wasn't expecting it that fast. Like, them to reveal that Jennifer was
some sort of monster.
One, some sort of demon or something.
And what do you think she is exactly? Are we talking about like a succubus kind of thing here?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, because she's using her allure to, coerce these people to be alone with her.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Low Shoulder, the band, the reason that they perform this whole ritual was because they wanted to become famous.
Exactly.
And it does seem to have worked to a certain degree because they start going on this big, you know, tour. And, in this town, though, they've become like the, you know, unofficial saviors, heroes of the town because of this stupid song that keeps playing over and over through the movie, Nicole. Do you remember this song, Nicole? How could you forget it?
Oh, my gosh. And every time Needy hears this song, of course, she's rolling her eyes because she does not like this band.
She doesn't like Low Shoulder because she knows that they, did something to her. Yes.
She definitely knows that her friend is not her friend anymore or the same. You know, there's definitely a change.
Yeah, something has happened. The song is called Through the Trees, Nicole.
That's right. Through the trees.
And yes, at some points during the movie, you know, people in the town are singing it together, you know, in harmony, singing it. And it's just, oh my God, it's just awful, Nicole. And at one point,
it is a lot of sentimental drivel.
Yes. Low Shoulder, on an interview on the radio, they say that they're going to donate 3% of the proceeds of the sales to, you know, the town here. To, yeah. fire prevention or something. I don't know exactly. Yes, grief-stricken people, whatever the case is, to make them seem great, but it is 3%, which is kind of funny. So the rest of the movie, then, is basically Needy trying to figure out what's going on with Jennifer, trying to solve what the mystery is, what happened to her. Jennifer eliminating people, eating people, specifically, you know, people that Needy likes, like her friend Colin Gray, who's definitely emo.
I call him goth.
You called him goth. Played by the actor Kyle Gallner. And yes, you know, she takes care of him. Then there's a school dance. She goes after Chip.
Yeah.
And then there's this big climactic battle in some sort of... it looks like it was abandoned. Like an abandoned...
A swimming pool.
An enclosed one. Indoors. Like some sort of rec center or something.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like it's in very good shape anymore, Nicole.
So, anyway, it all goes back to the band wanting a virgin.
Yes.
And not getting one.
Not getting one. Things have gone awry because
of that. That's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, those sacrifices, I guess you gotta make sure you're getting a virgin.
You better know what you're doing. If you screw it up, bad things could happen, Nicole, during these evil rituals.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, Nicole, so this movie had a $16 million budget. Domestically, it made $16.2 million. It opened originally on 2,700 screens, opened at number 5, making $6.8 million on its opening weekend worldwide, and ended up making $31.5 million. So I guess it did okay if you take in the worldwide take. It has a lot of recognizable faces in it. We mentioned a few of them. J.K. Simmons is in the movie playing a teacher, Mr. Rabluski. Amy Sedaris is in the movie playing Needy's mom, Tony. Anybody else that we missed? There are probably some other people that stand out too that you recognize. Lance Henriksen actually makes a cameo at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
Picking up a hitchhiker. We won't say who. We won't spoil that. The movie is directed by Kiran Kusama, who directed Girl Fight in the year 2000. And then later did a movie called The Invitation in 2015, which I'm not sure if it's still on Netflix, but it's okay. It was all right. And then a horror anthology. She participated as one of the directors in that. And it's just two X's, XX.
Okay.
And that's a movie, an anthology that is all women. Like, it's all women creators involved in that one. She also did a movie, directed a movie called Destroyer in 2018 with Nicole Kidman. The writer of this movie was really hot for a while. And that is Diablo Cody. Diablo Cody originally wrote Juno in 2007. And then went on, is listed as the creator of The United States of Terra, that show, which I guess started in 2009, did a movie called Young Adult in 2011, just wrote that one, and then wrote and directed a movie called Paradise in 2013, and then also wrote a movie called Tully in 2018. So, yeah, but Diablo Cody on the strength of Juno. Juno was kind of a big movie at the time.
Yeah.
One of those, you know, independent movies. Well, I don't even know if it was an independent movie, but it was a movie that kind of like, you know, a low budget movie that really kind of, you know, caught on.
Yeah, definitely.
Sort of in an underground way.
And definitely a cult movie.
Yeah. And then that was followed up by Jennifer's Body. So, yeah, she was really hot there for a little while.
So I remember seeing this one at the theater.
We did see this one at the theater. Yeah. This is only the second time I've seen it. Had you seen it again since seeing it at the theater?
I hadn't seen it since.
Okay, so neither of us had. So on our second viewing, Nicole, the original viewing, when I saw it in 2009, I thought it was okay, but I feel like I was, disappointed in it for some reason at the time.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know why or what that was. But, you know, giving it some years, giving it like 10 years, 11 years... Yeah, it's okay.
I think it held up.
Yeah, I had a pretty good time with it. There's some things that kind of, you know, like irritated me, but I think it was in a way where in most cases, it was intentional. Some of the characters are just kind of irritating. So, yeah, you know, that's okay. Certainly, the band Low Shoulder, to me, is absolutely just...
abysmal.
Yes, totally irritating. So, yeah, that's certainly reasonable because they're supposed to be villains. So, I guess that's totally fine. So, I guess the movie works pretty well, really. Yeah.
I would definitely amass this one. And it would be one of those that I would watch periodically.
You'd pop it in occasionally. When Craig's not home, you're like, man, Craig's not here. I get to watch whatever horror movie I want. I'm going to watch Jennifer's Body.
That's right, because all we have is horror movies.
That's right. That's all we have. You're absolutely right. Now, if we're, you know, let's go from the standpoint of, like, because, like, Megan Fox, too, like, at the time, she was, like, really,
she was,
really...
She is a big name.
Yeah, she was, like, really hot
and
at the time,
too. And so was Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, but
how
I don't...
say her name?
Yeah, Seyfried, that's right. But I don't think she was, like, at the time as hot as Megan Fox was. And now, you know, Megan Fox, like, she's not really in much anymore, but, you know, Amanda Seyfried kind of keeps, you know, popping up in things. And, you know, I don't know, I feel like she's much better in my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Well, in the movie, you have to be fair. Amanda, which was Needy, she seemed, like, reasonable. She seemed like a reasonable girl, you know.
You mean the character.
Yeah, the character. Mm-hmm. Jennifer just seemed like a vapid... snotty girl that just wanted her way and wanted her friend to do everything
so you
her
think
way.
That coming off of this movie, that's what's coloring my judgment of the actors.
Yeah.
You could be right.
I don't
could
think,
be right.
I mean, I don't know that Amanda Seyfried is a reasonable person. But
in real life.
In real life, I have no knowledge of that. But her character in this movie was very, you know... was very nice. She was a nice person.
She's a nice person, yes.
You and me are going out tonight. Wear something cute, okay?
You always do what Jennifer tells you to do.
It's just that I like the same things that she likes.
Hey, Jennifer. You look really pretty.
Why don't you just come by my place? That was random.
This isn't really your house, is it?
We can play Mommy and Daddy.
No way.
We always share your bed when we have slumber parties.
Jennifer's evil.
I know.
No, I mean, she's actually evil. Not high school evil.
Chip is looking really cute to me lately. How is he tasting these days?
You are never a good friend.
You could have anybody that you want. Why Chip? You're killing people.
No, I'm killing boys.
Nice kid.
I thought you only murdered boys.
I go both ways.
I will finish you if I have to.
Okay. You can barely finish gym class.
Okay. Nicole opted to sit this one out for some reason. I have no idea why. What we have here, listeners, is Killer Crocodile. Killer Crocodile is from 1989. It is an Italian production. It runs 1 hour and 30 minutes. And until recently, when that company you know I love, Severin, released Killer Crocodile and its sequel in a special, like, limited edition Super Blu-ray set, it hadn't been released in the United States. At least, you know, on home video. It is a adventure... horror science fiction movie? Science fiction, I guess, because it is about a killer crocodile who happens to mutate due to toxic waste being dumped into a river delta in some faraway tropical region, of course. The movie is directed and written by Fabrizio De Angelis, and basically, this is a Jaws knockoff, as maybe you would have suspected. In fact, there's a score, of course, for the movie, a musical score. Most movies have them. And it certainly, I don't think, would have existed without John Williams' Jaws score. ¶¶ Which, you know, let's be fair here. So many scores have been inspired by John Williams' score for Jaws. So I guess it's not that unreasonable, but just the fact that the movie, too, is definitely inspired by Jaws. Basically, substitute Jaws, Bruce the Shark, with a killer crocodile, a huge killer crocodile, and that's what we have here. Yes, this group of environmentalist young people, they're trying to stop this evil group of people from dumping chemical waste into this river, and of course money's involved. They don't want to stop doing it. There is a Quint-like character in this movie as well called Joe. His name is Joe, and he's basically there to be the expert on hunting down the crocodile. There's some terrible dialogue.
Come on, let me see you. Show me your stinking hide. Stick your nose out of the mud. I'll make a purse out of your rotten carcass. Don't scare me, you bastard. I'm right here, you overgrown polywog.
Polywog?
Crocodiles are very sensitive. They get really mad when you insult them. Go real crazy.
My favorite being this sort of interaction between Joe and the lead character, Kevin, at the end of the movie, basically bickering over whether or not his name is Kevin or Kid.
What are you doing, nuts? Shut up, kid. The sucker wants me, so let's give him a taste of what he wants.
Hey, don't call me Kid, huh? My name's Kevin.
Okay, kid. Just do what I say.
My name is Kevin. You got it, Kevin?
Whatever you say, kid.
And that's really, like, that's all you need to know about this movie, right there. There's some somewhat slow pacing, unfortunately. It's still fun to some degree. The gore, I guess, the giant crocodile itself, it looks terrible, but it's also fantastic. It's so large that it pretty much takes up the entire width of the river, it seems, sometimes. So, killer crocodile, absolutely ridiculous. This is one that I would certainly have to murder, but based on just the fact that I'm going to want to see that giant killer crocodile again, I probably will rewatch it. Plus, of course, there is that sequel. So that sequel, Killer Crocodile 2, may at some point make it into the A to Z of Horror Festival on a different year. I won't ruin the ending, but it certainly is somewhat Jaws-like. It's not exactly the same, but yeah, the sequel, which was shot back-to-back with this one, maybe it'll show up again someday. Maybe we'll watch that one down the road somewhere. And by down the road, of course, I mean down the river. I mean, obviously. Nicole, how do you feel about movies with alternate titles?
I'm kind of ambivalent about that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I kind of like it because it helps during the festival. If something has like a weird title with like an unusual word or something.
And then you can squeeze it in for a letter that you don't normally have.
Yeah, you might not normally be able to use or something like that as easily. But this is not a movie where it's one of those cases. But this movie apparently has something like 16 alternate titles.
What?
Just crazy. A few of the ones used in the United States are Don't Open the Windows, which apparently was an inspiration, that title specifically, for Edgar Wright doing the fake trailer during the Grindhouse double feature that played theatrically with Planet Terror and Death Proof. There was the fake trailers kind of like in between the movies. I think there was one at the beginning of the movie.
Those were great, by the way.
They're great. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. Edgar Wright specifically is very funny because the movie is just called Don't.
If you are thinking of going into this house, don't. you are thinking of opening this door. Don't. If you are thinking of checking out the basement, don't.
And yes, apparently, Don't Open the Window, this title for this movie, yeah, was his inspiration for doing the trailer. Don't. Anyway, there's another title, Breakfast at the Manchester Morgue. That seems like an odd title for this movie.
Yeah.
You have Let Sleeping Corpses Lie. That's another title for this movie. That's the first title.
That's the more common one.
That's the title that I originally saw this movie under, because Anchor Bay released like this movie in one of those giant tin cases, like a big tin box,
okay,
years and years ago on DVD. And I hadn't heard of the movie. I hadn't seen the movie. I just bought it blindly because they were releasing all these cool movies. And I'm like, yeah, here's a zombie movie I haven't seen. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to watch it. And I ended up really enjoying it.
You're so, like, man, take my money. I want this tin.
Give me this tin. Although, since then, I've gotten rid of that tin because I hated the tins because they take up too much space and it's a stupid tin box. What are you going to do with this thing?
I don't know, but you wanted it at the time.
At the time I did, yes. But since then, yes, Synapse has released a really, really nice Blu-ray Steelbook Collector's Edition, so it's still kind of tin. But yeah, and it is under the title The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue, not okay. Breakfast, Nicole. They're not having breakfast this time.
It's okay, just good.
The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. So, if you want this movie, this is a good way to get it. That Synapse one. Synapse. Go buy it from Synapse. You know, let's take a second here to talk about Synapse, because I love this company too. Not that long ago, a few years ago, they released some Argento movies, Dario Argento movies. And there was one, Tenebrae. And I was like, you know, do I really need to upgrade Tenebrae? I think it was during like a period where I was kind of down on Argento. Because in recent years, he hasn't really done anything that spectacular. I'm sorry, Dario. But
your personal friends.
Yes, my personal friend. I'm talking badly about him. But yes, Synapse released a couple of movies, Phenomena and Tenebrae. And I was like, Tenebrae, do I need to upgrade this? I did. I popped it in, and as soon as like the menu screen came up, I was like, oh my god, I'm so glad I upgraded this, because it,
oh
was,
my god,
it was phenomenal.
I need to buy everything.
Just
now.
The menu screen, I was blown away. And of course, later then, they also did a special edition of Suspiria, which is very, very nice as well. But Dario Argento has nothing to do with this movie, Nicole. Why did we get on this tangent?
I don't know. You were waxing poetic.
Stupid Craig and his Synapse love. Well, anyway, so The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue is what we're talking about. Nicole, this was released originally in Spain. This is a Spanish production, a Spanish-Italian co-production. And it was released in Spain, September 30th of 1974. Now, Nicole, kind of put this into perspective in your mind.
Okay.
Do this for me. Night of the Living Dead from George Romero was released in 1968. Now, the next Dead movie from Romero was not released until 1978, Dawn of the Dead, 4 years after The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. So this is right in between.
Yeah.
So there hadn't been that many of these sort of flesh-eating zombie movies yet at this point.
Okay.
So this is kind of still a relatively fresh idea, the whole flesh-eating zombie situation, Nicole.
Right.
This movie is a horror film, Nicole. It was released in the U.S. June 1st, 1975. So, you know, almost a year later. It's rated R, Nicole. It runs 1 hour and 35 minutes. The director of this movie, Nicole, I'm going to English this up. This is the English version of this poor Spanish director's name. George Grau. The only other horror film that I'm aware of that he did is a movie called The Legend of Blood Castle in 1973. I haven't seen it yet. Did you know, Nicole, that in this movie, the zombies, the really the score, the music, the soundtrack, there's a lot of like this kind of moaning breathing going on in the music, kind of.
Okay.
Well, not only in the music, but also just the sounds that the zombies make, the director is the one responsible for having recorded those moans and groans and sounds. So that's kind of cool.
That is kind of cool.
The movie.
Oh. I can honestly say that I didn't notice it.
You didn't even notice that, huh?
No.
Huh.
Did you notice it?
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on it.
The movie was filmed primarily in England. There were some things done on sound stages in Spain and Italy, but like the exterior shots and things like that, everything was done in the English countryside, Nicole.
Okay.
So, we start off the movie with Ray Lovelock playing a character named George. And George, he's some kind of an antique dealer or something. He's got like an antique shop, it looks like.
So George, he's going on vacation, and he's trying to get out of town. So it looks like he's leaving his shop in a hurry. He basically just grabs some stuff, flips the sign, locks the door, and gets on his motorcycle and speeds out of town.
He's going on holiday for the weekend,
that's
Nicole.
That's right. So he's out of there.
Yeah. He stops to get some gas at this roadside petrol station, and someone in front of him in a car has just gotten her car filled with gas and backs into his motorcycle, knocks it over, damages the wheel, and he's screwed. His holiday is ruined.
Yeah, basically, you would not be too happy about it.
I would not have been happy about it. As for me, like, I'm not in the movie, but I feel for the character because I would be very upset about it. My holiday is ruined.
My holiday is ruined.
So yeah, Christina Galbo playing Edna. She's the one who backs into his motorcycle.
Right, but he just leaves his bike at the station.
Yeah, because there's a garage there as well.
Yeah.
The garage. So he's going to get the wheel repaired, but it's going to take a few days because he's going to have to get it from Scotland or somewhere. I can't remember where it's coming from.
So anyway, he basically just gets in her car.
Yeah, he's basically like, here we go. I'm driving.
And they go off together.
Yeah. And like, maybe this is what happens in 1974. Maybe this is what happens in England. I don't know. But yeah, he just gets in. He's kind of like, well, you damaged my bike. So now you're taking me somewhere. So there they go. They drive off into the countryside. Apparently, he's supposed to meet some friends about some sort of a, I think like a house is being renovated. He's going to look at the house or something. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what he's doing. But he's going to meet some friends. But she's also supposed to be meeting her sister and brother-in-law, I believe, is the relationship. And she's upset because he wants to go and get dropped off at his friend's first. And she's like, no, I'm going to be late. And he's like, oh, fine, okay. So they end up going her way. But she doesn't know where it is. So they have to stop. They stop on the side of the road at a creek because there's some people up in a field working on some agriculture. There's a big device up there that looks kind of like
a combine.
A combine, what we would call it here in America, in the Midwest. We would call it a combine. So he goes up. George goes up to talk to these people to try to get directions. But there's something weird about this device, this combine.
That's right.
It's sending out some sort of waves,
radiation
that's supposed to be killing insects, pests.
Yeah.
This is a form of pest control.
That's right. So it's like they say they're the agriculture department.
Yes. And they say that this is all environmentally safe, but George, he's kind of a hippie-ish kind of guy.
He's really skeptical.
Yes, he's concerned about the environmental effects and the radiation effects, things like that.
As well he should be.
That's right. And while George is away trying to get directions, we cut back to Edna in the car at the side of the road next to a creek. And this scene to me, from my original viewing of seeing this movie, I was always struck because I thought it was kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And you, I said, okay, pay attention to this scene. And you didn't even think it was that big a deal.
Well, I think it's actually really pretty.
Mm.
So I would like to be by this little creek with these little stepping stones.
Yeah, you would, until the sort of this vagrant Guthrie, who apparently died recently by drowning in the creek. Well, he's at the creek somehow. He's the undead, apparently.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't appreciate that staring in the car at me.
Yeah, you don't really want Guthrie coming. So Guthrie, we see him as viewers kind of in the distance. And he has kind of this, I don't know, jerky walking motion, which I think for like 1974, you know, this is pretty good. Pretty good like zombie walk going on here. Because it's not kind of the traditional just kind of like, you know, like
Shambling
gait. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he kind of like twitches around as he's like rotating and turning, and it's a little freaky to me. Like, I feel like you see this later on in some other movies down the road, like say like maybe 28 days later or something, when those people are infected. And I know like maybe they're not zombies, they're like infected, but they definitely kind of like jerk and twitch a little bit more. So it's kind of akin to something like that. So then, who we later find out is Guthrie, he starts heading toward the car where Edna is. And yeah, he kind of like rapidly then approaches, and suddenly he's right there and like at the window and reaching in.
Yeah.
And yeah, kind of freaks me out a little bit. So then she, you know, gets out of the car and tries to go across those stepping stones that you were talking about. Yeah. She falls into the creek, of course. But yeah, anyway. Guthrie's disappeared then. But yeah, the whole scene, I don't know, it's a little weird. It kind of freaks me out a little bit. It's well done, well done. So, they get directions. They end up getting to the house where her
sister-in-law and her sister and brother-in-law live.
Yes. And, yeah, she's dealing with the whole situation there because
I think basically her sister might be an addict and the brother-in-law and Edna have plans to, like, put her in, like, you know, like, to detox.
Yeah, to get her some help. They're going to try to get her some help, yes. And the brother-in-law, Martin, ends up getting attacked. And then there's speculation, like, who did that? Was it Edna's sister, Katie, who did that? You get this whole other sort of, like, subplot involved here. You get this horrible, horrible inspector played by Arthur Kennedy. He's just a terrible guy.
He really thinks that everybody's bad.
Yeah.
Like, he really thinks that, like, everybody's, like, you know, that are trying to help are the bad people.
Yes. Yeah, he's very suspicious of everyone. This is kind of like, you know, and he has no name.
Especially George. He does not like
George. Yeah, he does not
like
George at all. But yeah, I don't think the character has a name. I think he's just the inspector. And I think this is kind of a way of, like, he's kind of, like, the man, you know? Like, the guy that, you know, like, out to get you all the time, you know? Out to bring you down. And poor George, you know, he's trying to look out for everybody. And he doesn't even want to be involved in any of this.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's asked not to leave. They have to stay at this hotel, George and Edna, because they're suspects in crimes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's just, like, becomes this whole weird, convoluted mess. They end up then, there's the suspicions about Guthrie, and they try to figure out, like, is this Guthrie? They're shown a picture of him in a newspaper, a recent newspaper from when he was found drowned in the creek. And, yeah, of course, they're like, yeah, that's him. That's the guy I saw. And, you know, no one believes Edna, of course. Yeah, it's suspected that, suggested by the inspector and, like, his buddies that work at the police station with him, that they're probably Satanists. These people are probably Satanists. Like, what? Where is all this coming from? It's all this, like, just nonsense, you know? Yeah. Like, they're suspected of everything. And they're suspected of being Satanists because they end up at this cemetery. And, yeah, they're battling zombies at the cemetery, Guthrie included, trying to get out of there. There's a police officer, again, named Craig. There's another Craig in a movie who's sent out to kind of spy on them and tail them and keep an eye on them. So he's checking them out at the cemetery. He's supposed to report back if they get up to any mischief.
Craig, they're up to something. Follow them and keep me up to date.
Well, Craig gets killed.
And arm the men. They killed Craig and the caretaker, so if they resist, shoot to kill. Poor Craig.
I do kind of like how the, you know, how Guthrie makes the other zombies.
Yes, he does. And how does he do that, Nicole?
So, well, these people are dead, and he just goes and touches them.
Yes, but what does he do specifically? He kind of reactivates them with blood. Like, he puts blood on their eyelids.
Yeah. So, it's kind of a different... Yeah. I think it's different.
Yeah, it's kind of cool, because he, yeah, uses this tactic to reactivate the dead. But all of the zombies in this movie, they have these sort of red and black eyes.
Yeah.
That are also, like, a little creepy.
Yeah.
So they end up escaping out of this...
It's like a crypt.
Yes. Escaping out of there, getting away from the zombies. But yes, the police officer Craig is dead. And of course, the inspector blames them for that. George must have done it.
Yeah.
They've desecrated the cemetery. They're obviously Satanists. Oh my gosh. They end up going back to, I guess, like, Manchester Morgue or the hospital. There are, of course, dead people there as well. This is where we kind of get to the big conclusion, where Edna's under attack. George is trying to save her.
Yep.
Does he save her? We won't necessarily say. Does George survive? We won't necessarily say. What happens to the inspector? We again won't necessarily say. But we will say that this does have kind of like a downer ending that I feel like is probably inspired in some part by the downer ending of Night of the Living Dead.
So, but also two twists.
Yeah, there are some twists at the end as well. So, not completely the same. They didn't rip it off or anything. No, it's a little different. So, The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue, Nicole. Let sleeping corpses lie. Don't open the window. Breakfast at the Manchester Morgue. Whichever title you know this movie as. What did you think of it? And you could be honest. If you didn't like it, you didn't like it.
I did like it. Like you said, I kind of enjoyed seeing England. Like, yes. I love those green hills.
The beautiful English countryside.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when they were driving down the road. I think it was when Craig was tailing them in the car to the cemetery. And they had these, like, rock walls lining the fields on the side of the road. Remember, I said, boy, it would be nice if we had some rock walls like that.
Yeah.
Did you like them?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Man. Like, they were,
like the rock walls.
Field fences.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But, yeah, they were rock walls. I said along the fields. Oh, my goodness, Nicole.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, anyway. So, yes, I'm going to amass the movie. It's not one that I watch that often. Because I feel like, I don't know, I don't want to watch it too often and get too used to it. And I think that scene that I just, you know, talked about with Guthrie, you know, coming from the creek to the car.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to, like, get too comfortable with that so it's completely spoiled, because I like how it's kind of weird and freaks me out a little bit. So if I watch it too often, I'll get too used to it and it'll be ruined. It'll be ruined, Nicole.
Well, I'm going to mass it as well, but I do agree this is one you could overwatch and just be like, oh, now I'm bored with it.
I'm so tired of this one.
Yeah.
There is certainly a good amount of gore in this. There's some, you know, gut munching that goes on with the zombies. But I don't feel like it's quite as over the top as some of the later zombie movies. But this one definitely, this isn't Night of the Living Dead. It's not black and white. This is in color. So you do get some bright red blood for sure, Nicole.
Gut munching.
Some gut munching, yeah. That's what it's called. Didn't you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, at the end also, yeah, during the climactic scene, there's some, you know, zombies there as well. And there's the one guy that's kind of like, he's all bandaged up and like his torso's kind of furry and he's wearing a little diaper or something.
You know, he's been autopsied.
So yeah, he's so he's got a big scar in his chest. Yeah, that one kind of freaks me out a little bit, too, that guy. They did a good job with him, too. And he's in some of, like, the promotional artwork with, like, these, like, kind of bulging eyes sometimes. Like a drawing of him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. It kind of freaks me out, too. This movie got some weird, freaky stuff going for it.
There is something I don't quite understand.
What is that, Nicole?
Why the coffins at Manchester Morgue morgue are metal.
They're metal with like a window in them, so you can see the person in
there. Do coffins normally have a window?
Now, apparently, I think they mentioned the reason for that. And I think the reason, well, not necessarily the window, but the reason they're like in these tin metal coffins is because they're refrigerated. Because apparently they have to go great distances from the city to like this facility. And yeah, I think they do mention at one point that that's why they're in these specific containers, because they're refrigerated.
I missed that part
then. Yeah. But yeah, it is kind of an unusual look for sure. Yeah. And it kind of almost like brings out like an idea of like some kind of conspiracy or something.
Right. Like are they weird, taking these like bodies that have been radiated and they're going to save them to release somewhere else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So maybe we created a conspiracy.
It's certainly possible. But yeah, there's a lot of talk of like, you know, the radiation in that, combine that emits these waves and, you know, what it's responsible for exactly. And what its range is also exactly, because they say, well, you know, its range isn't far enough to have caused any of this sort of stuff, but that's not exactly true, because they say that apparently they've improved the distance on it, so it affects a larger range.
Is it 1 mile? Is it 5 miles?
Uh-huh.
Is it longer?
So, maybe not a conspiracy, but there's definitely some stupid government shenanigans going on here that are causing these problems, Nicole. What a surprise. So we said, Nicole, that one of the things that I was trying to work in from here on out, or for a while, whatever the case may be, is in the festival, try to work in a Stephen King adaptation. And in the past, there certainly have been some, but it's not something that I've necessarily tried to do every year.
Yeah.
You would throw one in there occasionally, but yeah, it's not one that I was like, okay, this is something I'm setting as kind of a minor, lesser rule to try to include one. But I figured, hey, let's start that. Let's try to do that this year.
That's
so
fun.
I thought, this is one of those movies that's kind of a well-known movie. A lot of people have seen it. This is a good one as kind of to throw in as one of the headliner movies.
I think it's old enough that it's been forgotten.
You think people have forgotten it?
People need to revisit.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe they do.
Yeah.
What is this movie, Nicole?
This movie is Misery.
Oh! This starts with the letter M.
Yeah.
Now, Nicole, this movie is, of course, based on a novel by Stephen King, which was published in 1987, I believe.
Okay.
And apparently, this was one of the ones that may have originally been planned to be published under the Stephen King pseudonym Richard Bachman. However, it all came out that Richard Bachman was Stephen King, and then he was like, well, Richard Bachman, he died of cancer of the pseudonym, so he just released it as Stephen King.
Okay.
This movie is directed by Rob Reiner, Nicole. He has directed some other movies that you may have heard of.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
He did one in 1984 called This Is Spinal Tap.
Uh-huh.
In 1986, he did a Stephen King adaptation of a short story called The Body. And that is Stand By Me. Is it a short story? It might be a novella. Either way. Stand By Me, have you heard of that one? Okay. He also did a movie in 1987 that Nicole called The Princess Bride. In 1989, he did a movie called When Harry Met Sally. 1992, A Few Good Men. He's done some things that people have certainly seen
and
heard of.
Absolutely.
He did some other things after that, of course, as well.
A lot of other things.
But he's had a pretty good run there. Like, that's a pretty good run. It's written by the screenplay. Written by William Goldman, Nicole.
Okay.
Did you know, Nicole, that he's done a lot of screenwriting and writing as a novelist over the years?
I did know then.
He wrote Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, the screenplay for that, back in 1969. He wrote the screenplay for The Stepford Wives in 1975, All the President's Men in 1976. He wrote the novel and then the screenplay for Marathon Man, which was released in 1976. He also wrote the novel Magic, and then the screenplay for the movie Magic in 1978. And Nicole, he wrote a book called The Princess Bride.
That's right.
And then also wrote the screenplay for The Princess Bride. And then the screenplay for Misery, of course. And a lot of other things, you know, after that too. Yeah, he just keeps pumping them out. So this movie, Nicole, had a $20 million budget, which seems kind of hefty based on the fact that it has a really limited cast.
Has a limited cast and a limited, like, area that they
seem to utilize.
Yeah.
But it certainly is a very professional-looking Hollywood film.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it just costs a lot of money.
It just costs money.
I guess.
They had to rent helicopters.
Oh,
they
my had, gosh.
You know, I don't know if that was real snow. Maybe they had to have, like...
Maybe they had to import some snow. Maybe. They had to wreck his car, that Mustang.
That Mustang, right?
Oh, my goodness.
So, maybe everything adds up, man.
Maybe they had to build, the house, the interior. I don't know. You know, set design. Whatever, Nicole. But... this movie, it did okay. It ended up making $61 million at the box office, including $10 million on its opening weekend. And it opened at number two because it couldn't quite defeat little Kevin Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, Nicole.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was on a Thanksgiving time frame there. And man, you just couldn't knock out that family movie, Home Alone. Yeah, so Misery... originally released on November 30th of 1990. It's rated R. It runs 1 hour and 47 minutes, Nicole. This is not a horror film. Did you know that?
No, come on.
Nope. This is a drama. And then, of course, the dreaded T word. But this is around a time frame when horror coming out of the 80s, there were a lot of horror films released in the 80s, and there was the stigma attached to them. You're right.
Yeah.
Where everything was like a slasher. Everything was a bunch of girls running around with their boobs flying out. And, you know, all this kind of stuff. All the slasher movies from the 80s.
Yeah.
So horror was kind of looked down upon.
Yeah.
Horror over the years, of course, specifically in Hollywood, definitely looked down upon. Except for when it was raking in loads of cash for the big studios. Anyway, I'm going to let that go, Nicole.
Okay,
I'm
going to let it go.
But, yes, I didn't want to call anything horror. And this one, it certainly isn't over the top with horror, but there's certainly
horrific
elements.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. So, we have James Caan, Nicole, in the starring role, I suppose, as Paul Sheldon, a writer. Now, what's going on here, Nicole?
So he's a writer, and he goes to this cabin in the woods to finish a book. Every time he finishes a book, he likes to finish it up at this cabin.
Yeah, this is like his ritual.
His ritual, right. So I believe...
So he's very superstitious.
Yeah, and I believe he always has, you know, some Dom Perignon and...
Dom Perignon.
Dom Perignon. And that's how it's said later on in the movie.
Yes.
He always has the smoke, and the champagne. So,
yeah.
You know, that's his thing.
That's just the ritual.
That's his thing. So, and he puts it in his briefcase, and he only types it and has that one copy of it.
Yeah.
So, apparently, that's just what he does. So, he you know, he's at this cabin. He finishes it up. He puts his novel away. He gets in his car.
He's going to drive to New York to see the agent.
That's right. Yeah. Got to go into town to deliver the book.
Yep.
So it's bad weather.
Yeah, there's a blizzard coming.
And it starts, you know, to have the blizzard.
And he doesn't know because this is one of those guys, you know, he doesn't care what's going on in the world with the weather. He's all about his business, right? He's
writing.
And he's going to New York to get his book in time.
That's right. So he wrecks the car.
I have to tell you, Nicole, let me stop you for a second here. When he's driving in the snow, I had a lot of anxiety just watching him driving in the snow. Like, could you just calm down? And I, you know, driving in the snow, it weirds me out a little bit. I don't like it very much.
We live in an area that's really snowy, Craig.
It freaks you out? Yes, it freaks me out a little bit when you got to drive in it.
Oh.
I don't like driving in the snow.
Well, you're very careful.
He should have been more cautious.
That's right.
Because, yeah, like you said, he crashes. He runs off the side of the road, and they're like mountain roads.
That's right. Okay, well, anyway, he crashed, and then a little bit later, we see somebody prying open his door with a crowbar and, like, hauling him out. Fireman carrying him out of there.
That's right. Fireman.
So what happens then, babe?
Well, babe, he's taken back to this person's cabin, and it's revealed that this is Kathy Bates. The actor.
Kathy Bates?
Yeah, Kathy Bates has rescued him from the car, and it's just Kathy Bates.
No.
No, I'm kidding. So Kathy Bates, this was kind of like her first kind of standout major role. She had been in some things prior to this, but she was a relative unknown.
Yeah.
But then she's in this movie, and she does very well playing this character, Annie Wilkes.
Yeah, so, like, I feel like she's fantastic. I feel like she plays such an innocent, nice character. And it's like, you feel like she's really pure, and she's so helpful.
Yes. And then, she's a nurse, and...
But, you know, she snaps a little bit.
She does, which we'll get to. Yes. James Caan, as Paul Sheldon, he's the writer of this series of books. And the main character is named Misery.
Uh-huh.
And it's a series of books. And Annie Wilkes is in love with this series of books. She is his number one fan.
That's right. Number one fan.
She even has kind of like a shrine in her house where she has all the books, an autographed photo of him sitting there, Paul Sheldon.
Yeah. So she knows exactly who he is.
Her pet pig is named Misery, Nicole.
That's right. So she knows exactly who he is.
Yeah.
And she's taking really good care of him because he's almost her idol.
Yeah. His legs are fractured. So she has
splinted them.
Yes.
And since it is a blizzard, you know, there's no help. She can get him to a hospital. So she splinted them and straightened them out and, you know, done the best she could. And
they're terribly bruised, pretty grotesque.
And it actually, like when you first see him, it kind of makes your joints ache a little bit, I feel like, because to see that, like, bruising that just kind of aches a little.
Man, that doesn't look very comfortable, does it?
Right, right. Makes me hurt.
Nicole.
Like a little old lady, it makes me hurt.
Just like a little old lady. So, because he's been rescued, Paul gives her the opportunity to, as a reward sort of, read his new book that he's written and he's going to deliver to the publisher.
Yeah.
Well,
because, I mean, you get the feeling he finds her a little quirky, but not, you know, threatening.
Yeah, she might be a little odd, but seems okay. Yeah. You know, she seems like a good-hearted person. Well, she's reading this new book, and really, the first kind of cracks that she shows that maybe she's not all there, in my opinion, is when there's a lot of profanity in this new book, and she doesn't like it. She kind of goes on this tirade talking about it then.
Yeah.
And she starts, like, trying to use profanity, and it's, like, in these odd ways where it doesn't quite fit and doesn't quite work.
Oh, there's a good one, she says.
What does she say, Nicole?
Cock-a-doodie.
Cock-a-doodie!
Cock-a-doodie. Yes. She does like to say cock-a-doodie. Yeah, she talks about, like, you know, when I go to the bank, should I, like, you know, say, hey, I need to, you know, cash this big bastard of a check, you know, things like that. And it's just, like, really, you know, strange ways to use profanity. But yeah, like I said, she goes on this tirade about it. And he's like, whoa, okay, so maybe, you know, she's a little more odd than I thought.
Yeah.
But she's still taking care of me. All right, I can get over this. It's fine.
The swearing, Paul. There, I said it.
The profanity bothers you.
It has no nobility.
These are slum kids. I was a slum kid. Everybody talks like that.
They do not? What do you think I say when I go to the feed store in town? Oh, now, Wally, give me a bag of that effing pig feed and 10 pounds of that bitchly cow corn? And in the bank, do I tell Mrs. Bollinger, oh, here's one big bastard of a check. Give me some of your Christing money. There, look there. See what you made me do.
So she's still giving the book a shot. You know, she's still putting up with it.
Yeah. But then and, the and next it, thing.
So, like, at first, these fractures, you called them, they're really funny.
Yes.
At first. But then you realize, man, okay, you better step lightly.
Yes. Because you don't know what's going to set her off.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Well, something sets her off in a big way.
Yeah.
And it is the release of the latest Misery book.
And she saw it, and she had to get it, and she's so excited about reading it.
The guy who runs the general store in town, he always sets the first copy aside for her of these Misery books by Paul Sheldon, because he knows she loves the series, she's going to come and buy it immediately. She does. She reads it. And what happens in this book, Nicole?
So, Paul kills Misery off.
Yes.
He's essentially wants to be done with this series so he can just move on to other projects. And he feels like if he doesn't kill Misery off, he's going to keep writing these books.
Misery forever, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he kills her off. And man, she does not appreciate that.
She loses it, Nicole.
She loses it.
You dirty bird. How could you? She can't be dead. Misery Chastain cannot be dead.
Annie, in 1871, women often died in childbirth. But her spirit is the important thing, and Misery's spirit is still alive.
I don't want her dead! I want her! And you murdered her!
No, I didn't.
Who did?
No one. She died. She just slipped away.
Slipped away? Slipped away? She didn't just slip away. You did it. 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 You murdered my Misery.
Annie.
Well, ultimately, she begins to force Paul to write a new Misery book. Forget this other book. She sets it on fire in like a little barbecue grill in the bedroom where he's recuperating. His book that he's worked so hard on, there's only this one copy of it. She sets it on fire, burns it up, it's gone. All that hard work that he's put into writing this new book that is not Misery is gone.
Yep.
And she then says, you're going to write a new book, and it's going to be bringing Misery back. You're going to continue the series Misery. You're going to have to bring Misery back.
That's right. So basically, she's forcing him to write a new book.
Yeah, she's basically holding him hostage until he writes this new book.
Right.
And she's told him, you know, that she's contacted the hospital. And
she's called the police. And she's talked to his daughter.
Spoken to
his agent. That's right, agent.
And yes, she then tells him, though, that none of that is true. That no one knows he's there. And he's essentially a prisoner. Yeah he's just a prisoner there until he finishes this book.
Exactly.
And that, I think, would make you a little uncomfortable if you're Paul Sheldon.
I would think that would make anybody uncomfortable. But I think Paul plays it really cool.
He does.
Because, like, I think people's first inclination to that would be to lash out and to be mean and to, like, throw a fit. But he knows he's dependent
on her. Yes, he's virtually helpless.
Because his arm is, like, was out of the, like, his shoulder.
The socket, yeah.
Or his shoulder.
Yeah, the shoulder was out of the socket.
Yeah, shoulder was out of socket.
But his primary thing is the legs.
Yeah. Were broken.
His legs are shot.
So, yeah, he's dependent on her. Like right now. So yes. he doesn't lash out at her. He doesn't try violence, you know. And I think that would be so hard not to do that, not to lash.
That's right,
out
Nicole.
Like that.
You have a couple of other characters. You have Richard Farnsworth, who plays Buster, who is the local law enforcement. His wife, Virginia, played by Frances Sternhagen, is really like his only deputy. I think he calls her his deputy. There's a scene, I think, where he says, she puts her hand on his knee, uh-huh. like when they're driving in the car, and he says,
Virginia, when you're in this car, you're not my wife, you're my deputy.
Well, this deputy'd rather be home under the covers with the sheriff.
Yeah.
And I don't know, they're very cute. They're very cute, don't you think? They're a very lovable pair.
Yeah. I think they're adorable.
So he goes on to try to investigate and see what's happened to Paul Sheldon, because Paul Sheldon, of course, has been reported as missing. And his last known location was at the local lodge or whatever it is.
So eventually they do find his smashed up, crashed up car.
And they think that he's crawled out of the car and is somewhere in the snow, and they're not going to find him until the snow melts, if the animals didn't already find him.
Yeah, but the sheriff said... He's smart enough to know that somebody pried the door open with a crowbar.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to figure out his own suspicions.
Yeah, he's trying to figure out who did this, what's happened to him, where he is. So, yes, they're kind of flying around with a helicopter looking for evidence, looking for signs that Paul Sheldon might be somewhere. And, of course, there are spoilers here in the movie. We're not going to spoil everything.
No. I think everybody needs to watch it and just see what happens. And think of what you would do if you were in this position.
Yes.
Or in this situation.
He does manage to get out of the bed he does have a wheelchair. Manages to get out of the room. And he finds some evidence that maybe Annie Wilkes has had some problems in the past.
Yeah.
So, yes, we won't necessarily reveal a whole lot more than that. Annie discovers that he's found a way out of the room. And the scene, Nicole, there's one, like, scene that everybody remembers from Misery.
Oh,
we're going to spoil this because there's something you said during the movie that I got a kick out of. So, there's a scene, and it's the hobbling scene.
Okay.
Where she puts the log between his legs because he's escaped the room, and she knows this.
Yeah. So he already had two broken legs.
Yeah.
They're healed enough that he can move around a little bit.
He still can't walk.
Wheelchair. But yeah, so she's going to hobble him.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is hobbling? What happens here?
Basically, she's breaking his feet.
Yeah. So she puts the log in between his legs, and then with a sledgehammer, clubs one ankle, and you kind of see it, like, flop over.
Yeah.
And then the second one is not done on screen. It's not done on camera. And Nicole, she was disappointed in this. She said, you know.
You wrote down what I said?
You said, you know, like, that, I didn't get to see the other one. I said, did you like that? And she said, yeah, I kind of like how it flopped over like that. And I thought, oh my God, Nicole is sadistic. But yeah, she was kind of disappointed when she didn't get to see the second one flop over like that again. Nicole, shame on you.
Well, it's kind of a horrific scene, you know.
Certainly. So you're trying to cope with it by lightening it up.
Yeah.
I see.
But you know what? And she drugged him. So, like, she waited for him to wake up before she did it.
Yeah.
She could have done that.
While
he was out. But she was the one who was sadistic enough to wait till he woke up.
Yeah. He was back to consciousness.
Yep.
Well, okay, yeah. So we won't spoil everything about Misery. I feel like a lot of people have seen it, but like you said, maybe it's kind of forgotten.
I think it's a forgotten gem.
A forgotten little gem, Nicole.
Yeah.
Did you know, Nicole, that Kathy Bates as Annie Wilkes won the Best Actress Oscar for this movie?
She should have. She was really good.
Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, someone else in that role. I was trying because I was going through, you know, like history on the movie, mm-hmm. notes on the movie, and, you know, these other people who were, you know, up for the role.
They're,
and, you know, trying to imagine them, you know, like, in the role, and some of them you could kind of see it a little bit, and other ones it was like, what? Like, no. You know, that wouldn't have worked at all.
I think she played it with an earnestness in her eyes.
Yeah.
That's why I say that she came off so innocent in the beginning, is because it was I feel like she definitely had that earnestness in her eyes.
I do think, yeah, there is, now that you mention that, there's a lot going on with her eyes in the movie that you kind of notice as you're watching it. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see when, like, the different sides of her personality are kind of taking hold. You do see kind of, like, the earnest innocence, I guess, at certain times. And then you kind of see, like, her eyebrows and her eyes mm-hmm. kind of change a little mm-hmm. bit when she's about to do something devious
she
or something like that.
Like, great expressiveness yeah. with her face, you know, during that role.
Yeah, it's a fantastic performance. Yeah, I can't imagine anyone else doing that. James Caan as Paul Sheldon, apparently one of the people who was offered that role initially was Jack Nicholson. And he passed on the role because he had done The Shining, which is a Stephen King adaptation uh-huh. prior to this, and had kind of a rough experience working with Stanley Kubrick on the movie. Working with Rob Reiner probably would have been significantly different than
probably
working with Kubrick,
so.
Who is somewhat notorious as being kind of a severe hard ass on the set.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so Nicholson said, you know, I don't know if I'm going to go through something like that again. So just like the mention of Stephen King, you know, he's kind of like, no, never mind. Yeah, I don't want to do that. So the interesting thing here is that James Caan was actually offered the role of R.P. McMurphy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest back in the 70s. He passed on that. Nicholson took that role and then won an Oscar for that.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting how those two kind of, you know, like...
Flip-flop.
Yeah, flip-flop there a little bit. Also, one of the people mentioned for the Paul Sheldon character was Warren Beatty. And Warren Beatty apparently said that after the scene where he's hobbled, you know, after that scene, Paul Sheldon, in Warren Beatty's mind, was just kind of, like, worthless after that point. Like, he was just a loser of a character, is what he said. Because the Annie Wilkes character was so strong.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I read that a lot of the people who were offered the role were saying when they read the script. As a leading man in this movie, their egos couldn't handle Annie Wilkes kind of being
woman.
this more important, you know, more exciting character.
Huh.
So
I think that this movie is an advocate for feminism as well.
I think it is too. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. James Caan, I don't know. I'm not a huge James Caan fan. I think he does pretty well in this movie. I wonder who else would have, like, I don't know, done pretty well in this movie. I don't know. You know, could someone else have pulled it off? I don't feel like he is, you know, necessarily the standout, I guess, because really, you know, the Annie Wilkes character is so strong.
She is.
That's what you remember
from
the movie. So maybe, you know, some of those actors, maybe they had a point, I guess, in their egotistical way where it was going to bring them down and they weren't going to be noticed for it. I don't know. It's hard to say, Nicole.
I vote that this one isn't a must, of course. It's one that I would definitely watch again.
You'd watch it again, even though it's a forgotten movie. Going to have to dig it back out of the ground
right.
and rewatch it. Dig it out of the snow there on the side
one.
Of the road.
Watch this one a little more often.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It is a pretty good one. You also have Lauren Bacall, who we didn't mention, in kind of a later role for mm-hmm. her, as Marcia Sindel, who is the agent of Paul Sheldon, who, you know, pops up on the screen occasionally in this one. This book, Nicole, Stephen King didn't want to talk about this at the time of its release. I believe it's been said that he waited about 20 years before he really wanted to discuss it. But apparently, the book is really kind of about Stephen King's battle with substance abuse. So the Annie Wilkes character is kind of like those...
Drugs.
Yeah, drugs and substances that he might have been using that he was having a hard time overcoming.
Huh.
So that's kind of an interesting take on it when you think about it that way and that perspective.
Yeah.
Also, Stephen King, he loved Kathy Bates so much in this movie that he wrote the novel Dolores Claiborne in hopes that it would then be made into a movie and that Kathy Bates could star in the movie.
Star in the movie.
And sure enough,
she did.
That's exactly what happened. Yes. So, yeah, I think that's interesting too that he wrote Dolores Claiborne with mm-hmm. Kathy Bates in mind as that lead character.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Dolores Claiborne, your girlfriend's in that movie.
Jennifer Jason Leigh. Yeah, you better believe it. Yes, Nicole. So I will also amass this movie. Yeah, it is very good. And like you said, I feel like I don't think about this one as often as I probably should. Based on the strong performances, Kathy Bates in particular. But man, Richard Farnsworth and Francis Sternhagen. Richard Farnsworth as Buster is so great. He's such a great character. Just, you know, such a lovable, sweet man.
I feel like he was so suspicious. And I feel like he was vindicated.
Yeah, he's very good about, like...
He definitely suspected her.
Yeah, and very good about piecing together the information, solving the puzzle what happened to Paul Sheldon. And yeah, I like that supporting character.
He figured out that Annie was really into Paul Sheldon novels.
Yeah, he kind of pieced all this evidence together and came away with, a very firm suspect, let's put it that way.
It equaled out for him.
Yeah, I think so.
Cock-a-doodle!
Okay, Nicole, this is our closing for part two of the A to Z, the 16th annual, Nicole, A to Z of Horror Festival.
Okay.
And you're right, you did survive. And so far, you're doing pretty well. We've done, I believe, 13 movies to this point. And the only one you decided was not worth your time was which one, Nicole?
Killer Crocodile.
Yes, Killer Crocodile. You tried to put it out of your mind completely, so you just completely forget the title.
Yeah.
So, Nicole, out of this batch, I Drink Your Blood, Jennifer's Body, not Killer Crocodile, because you didn't watch it, The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue, and Misery. It's really just those four, Nicole, because, you know, Hellraiser, that was its own thing. So out of those four, this shouldn't be that difficult. Which one was your favorite, Nicole?
Well...
And if you had seen Killer Crocodile, that would have been your favorite. No, it wouldn't have. It's terrible.
No. So I'm going to go with Misery because I'm still impressed by Kathy Bates.
Still impressed with Kathy Bates. Yeah. And that makes sense. Yeah, I feel like that's a very strong choice, Nicole.
It's a strong movie.
Yes, very strong movie, very strong choice. Yes, good job. That's a fine selection, Nicole. For me...
How about you?
I think it would be a tough choice between The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue and Misery for me. Since you chose Misery, I'll go with The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. I'll go to that one. But Misery is... It's an exceptional film, yes. A fine film, Nicole.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. So, Nicole, do you think you've got the energy to continue on to a part three?
Well, yeah, I've already watched some of those movies.
What? You watched them without me?
Yeah.
No, you didn't. We watched them together. Yeah, we got to keep things rolling. We got to keep things rolling in between these recordings.
You
got to
watch the movies when you can.
Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, you run out of time.
Yeah.
And that's awful. You can't let that happen.
Yes.
But no, we're definitely ahead of the game. So we're doing well, Nicole.
Yeah.
We're going to have time for bonus features at the end of the month, which is great.
Well, I've watched about four or five additional movies when you weren't here.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm way ahead.
You're way ahead, huh?
I'm way ahead of schedule.
Oh, yeah. And you're also watching a lot of Kipo and the Power of Juji.
Yes, it's Kipo. And
isn't that what I said, Kipo?
Yeah, but then you always add that second part.
You mean the Power of Juji?
Yes.
What is that from, Nicole?
I have no idea what that means.
Now, I don't know why I throw that on there, but it does have some sort of subtitle. Kipo does. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, it's In the Age of the Wonder Beasts or something.
Okay, something like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, for some reason, just to give you a hard time, I call it Kipo and the Power of Juji. Now, where that actually comes from is there is this old video game from like the, I think it's from like the PlayStation 2 kind of era. And it's called Tak and the Power of Juju. And it's like Tack doesn't sound anything like Kipo.
But that so maybe reminds
know,
you.
I don't know why I, you know, use that. I don't know. And it's not Juju, it's Juju, but Juju just is more fun or something. I don't know. This is just this is the kind of stuff that poor Nicole has to tolerate.
Yeah.
This abuse from the common Craig at home, being teased about what she watches.
So I'm going to tell you a couple of the extras that I've watched. So I watched Over the Garden Wall, which is fantastic.
Did you watch that? Like, yeah, since we talked about it, like a few days ago?
Well, yeah. Oh, it's only like, gosh. It's only a one-nighter.
It's only a one-nighter. That is a very good show, though.
It's a very it's good very cartoon. Yes. Yeah. So I highly recommend that. You know.
Highly recommended from Nicole.
I watched an old favorite, The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one to watch. That's a good one,
yeah. You know, and a few more, but...
Well, that's good. At least you're sneaking in some extras.
I'm sneaking in some extras.
You know, I've snuck in a few extras,
too. Oh, okay. What have you snuck in?
I did sneak in this movie called Equinox.
Okay.
That has been used in the festival before years ago, so I didn't feel bad about watching it because it's already been in the festival. You can't count it for the festival again.
Yeah.
So I watched that one.
Okay.
And it's kind of goofy, late 60s, sort of another kind of like a creature feature with some strange creatures in it. Very low budget. And it's definitely worth checking out. Criterion actually released a DVD version of this years ago. They haven't done a Blu-ray. But yeah. It's kind of an inspiration, clearly, in some ways, for the original Evil Dead. You can see visually a few things that definitely inspired Sam Raimi. There's no question about it.
Oh.
What else have I watched? I don't know. I remember Equinox. Oh, I did watch Die, Monster, Die with Boris Karloff as well. And I think maybe a few other things, too. But, yeah. Anyway. So, yes, we just... Even when we're not watching together... We're sneaking these things in around each other's backs.
Oh, my goodness.
Just ridiculous, Nicole. Well, Nicole, part three, like I said, it's coming up.
Part three's coming.
It's coming up. We've already watched the majority of those movies. Then we're going to have to talk about those movies.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. Then we're going to have to edit those talks and release it as an episode. Woo! And then we're going to have a part four, Nicole.
Awesome.
Which will be the final part of the 16th the finale. Annual, yes, HZ of Horror Festival.
Oh, okay.
All right, Nicole, we better wrap it up because we got to watch another movie.
That's right.
Nicole, where can they find us? On social media and the internet.
Facebook,
you can find us at the page A Cure for the Common Craig.
Instagram,
you can find us at Cure for the Common Craig.
Twitter,
you can find us at Common Craig.
And website.
The website is cureforthecommoncraig.com.
Cool.
And if you haven't listened to part one and you're somehow listening to part two, you should listen to part one. And if you have the time, you should also listen to the Hellraiser.
Watch along
while you're watching the movie.
Yeah.
Whenever you get time. Give it a listen. See if it's fun. And then let us know. Give some feedback.
Yeah, give us feedback because we want to know if it was fun or not.
Yeah. And if it wasn't fun, we don't want to torture you with it again.
I don't
want to
do it again.
Oh my God, was it a miserable experience?
No, it wasn't miserable, but I don't want to do it unless people have fun with it.
Oh my goodness, okay. I can't believe you didn't have fun with it, Nicole.
I had fun with you.
All right, Nicole. We better go.
And we have movies to watch.
Good night, Nicole.
Good night.
Good night, listeners.
They killed Craig.
My name is Kevin. You got it, Kevin?
Poor Craig.